And we are back.
Black and a Half, episode number 237.
237.
Yeah. I'm Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Run.
And this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Today we have a guest. A very delightful woman, a comic, Lynn Harris, the founder, one of the founders of Comedy Gold.
Gold Comedy.
Lynn Harris, one of the founders of Gold Comedy. She's with us, joins us for this, about an hour, talking about the website and the company and how they support comics all over the country. And
all over the world probably could too.
I would think so. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And it seems like a really cool resource for people who are looking to get into more comedy and just their community. Either, it's not, the schedule doesn't work, the resources aren't there, or, whatever. Another opportunity to get involved.
Because truthfully, as busy as I know you have life things, I have life things, like, I feel like I'm able to go out more, but I'm not willing to, because I'm not willing to put out the 3 hours for the 4 minute at an open mic.
Also, too, at that prime time at night when you want to be home with your kids, your family. So it can get a little bit tricky with time. And also, it sounds like they have some really cool advisors, celebrity Q&As. I think she said Rachel Dratch is an advisor. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. Right.
That's cool. Yeah. I think it's cool just to discover resources that are out there, especially related to comedy. I think they're harder to find and to know who's legit, right? What's legit. Mm-hmm. And she's out of New York, so it has to be legit, because that's comedy. Yeah. Comedy in New York is just legit. It's more. You've noticed that, like, in Seattle, like in acting, if you said somebody was from New York City, people go, ooh.
Yeah, that's why people like me so much,
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can just say any state you're from, to make yourself cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got a few under my belt, but it's true. Yeah.
New York actress. Yeah. Samantha Rund.
Yeah, well, my first play, it was in New York. Was it? I mean, I was a kid, but yes, my first play was in New York State. I had a lead in the main stage in my elementary.
New York City or New York State?
Yes. Okay. No, New York City.
I like when people say they're from New York, but they're actually like from Syracuse, right? And
yeah.
You're like, that's not what we thought when you said that. Anyway. Anyway, folks, do us a favor. Do the like, do the subscribe, do the share, do everything that you can. For us as a show and as this episode individually,
Perhaps enjoy some truffles while you're doing so.
Enjoy some truffles.
That will be explained further.
Yeah, all sorts of truffly things.
Mm-hmm.
So sit back, relax, open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 237. Lynn Harris. Gold Comedy and the Art of Truffles. Lynn Harris, our guest today from Comedy Gold. A brick wall and everything, so we know you're a comedian.
This is actually my home. No, it's not. You can tell my hand disappeared.
Lynn, tell me about Gold Comedy.
I'd love to. Thank you. So, hi. First of all, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And so, Gold Comedy is the comedy school and professional network and content studio where women and non-binary creators and others, as we like to say, amp up their comedy careers, build a powerful community, and make funny stuff. So we're mostly online, but we definitely have people who, you know, find each other through us and then start doing stuff IRL in their own towns and cities. We have classes, we have celebrity, we have Q&As with celebrities and pros. We have digital sketch teams. We have many, many more digital sketch teams that are, we have zero digital sketch teams that are all dudes. That's a thing that differentiates us from SNL. Let's put it that way. We are able to really support people, not just in building individual skills like stand-up storytelling, whatnot, but we're able, because we're a community and a network with lots of friends and connections, we're able to help people, you know, build their pilots into successful pitches and get representation. We're able to help people take a web series from an idea to Series Fest, where two of our folks are right now. So we're really serious about the, you know, just putting more different creators into the world and having them and their stuff succeed.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it's exciting. Do you have, like, for your creators, does it tend to be like a spread over like different areas, or, you know, are there more popular hotspots? I know since a lot of it's like online, I don't know how one, you know, you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we have like comedy clusters, you know, in like New York, LA, Chicago, Boston, Austin, Seattle, and Portland. But we also, one thing that's great about at least being headquartered online is that, yeah, we're able to find the people who don't have huge comedy scenes where they live, or maybe don't need a comedy scene in order to succeed. You know, if they want to be a TV writer, they can get their chops now and then figure out the LA part, you know, if they need to. I was literally this second just talking to someone who is taking our pitching class and our humor writing class right now, but she came from stand-up and spent a lot of years doing stand-up, but she, for reasons, she lives in West Palm Beach, Florida. And she's like, I can't go to the mics here. Like, they're just like MAGA mics. Like, I can't go. Yeah. And we have online mics that are super friendly. So, and not at all, you know, and not at all MAGA. So, so we're able to provide that kind of community as well. And even for people who, for folks who there's a scene in her area, but it's not the scene that she necessarily wants. So, you know, we can't these days, you know, we focus on women and non-binary folks and others, as we like to say, but like, we can't, the only thing, you know, your gender is whatever you tell me it is. The only thing that we can control for is, or sort of promise or aspire to, is no bro vibe. And I think that's really what people are looking for. It's not like, they're not looking to have a sort of single-sex comedy experience necessarily. They're just looking for a place that is supportive, collaborative, where they don't have to sort of negotiate weirdness, and they can just fail, be funny, be weird, do comedy.
I'm thinking about
what's MAGA comedy? Like, what's a MAGA?
Like, bro, I have no. Well, we all know. We know what MAGA comedy is from what's his name? What's his place? You know, I don't even want to say his name, but the Madison Square Garden rally that we all
the Kill Tony kind of comedy. Is that what it is?
I guess.
I don't know. I was just thinking too, even just from an accessibility thing in terms of scheduling too, where you were saying the woman you were speaking with, she can't go to mics because she doesn't want to go to the MAGA mics. And I'm thinking, I can't go to mics because I can't do an evening schedule. I can't go to the mics right now in my town anyway, just because of scheduling. And so that's really awesome to have like another option if you can't go just for whatever reason.
It's the part of, well, two things. First of all, I don't know about the mics that we were talking about in Florida. I don't know if the content is all MAGA. You know, I just know that she like walked in, saw the hats and said, no, thank you. And also she knows that her material is not going to land.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's, you know, whatever their material is, hers won't work. Right. So it's just not her. It's not her place. The second thing is, you know, the thing that, you know, the pandemic could have done without it. But given that it happened, one thing that I think is helpful that we took away was just normalizing this, you know, normalizing talking to people on screens, normalizing, like, no one asks me anymore. They used to, but no one asks me anymore, oh, can you really teach comedy online? Or, oh, can you really do comedy online? Like, zero people ask me, because that's, like, as in many other spaces, that's been normalized. So, yeah, you're right. It's really handy. Depending on if you know, don't live in a comedy city, have, you know, a weird work schedule, have a weird family schedule, or just don't want to go out. You know, it's convenient to be able to do stuff. And we also have a lot of like big word asynchronous content where you can, you know, on demand stuff where you can kind of nerd out with all of the stuff that we have available, whether they're like recordings of previous workshops or stuff that was made to be on demand, you know, on demand workshops. You can nerd out 24/7.
It's the online comedy shows that I still don't know. Like, I don't think I've ever watched one.
Well, you know, we did a show and we should have thought of this like way before. Although we were kind of doing it without realizing it. Every month or two, we do a community showcase called Bold Comedy Live online.
Yeah.
And we did one last week. It was hilarious that we called It's Funny on Zoom. And so we asked our members to come up with stuff that was funny because it's Zoom, right? So like using the rectangle, you know, like prop comedy, not funny in a club, you know, super funny. Not that this lemon is very funny, but like, you know, just to bring things into your screen on Zoom is really funny. And one member did this thing where she did monologues of herself on various first dates. And let me see if I can replicate this, which it was so funny. We were howling. So she would like tell the story of one date and then she'd be like, so anyway, and she'd tell the story of that date.
Yeah.
So, can you stop crying? And she had a better setup because she had, and for those of you just listening, I was changing my Zoom background.
Yeah.
She had a different kind of cafe looking backgrounds. So she just kept switching the cafe to show like that she was talking to a different guy. Like that's comedy on Zoom, you know? And we have a teacher who, we have a member who came, her background was in improv and she taught improv and is an actor. And she came to us because she wanted to branch out to stand up. And she lives in Louisville where there's not a lot going on. And also she does elder care. So like her schedule is really for her mom. So her schedule is really constrained. So now she's like winning comedy competitions up in like Louisville and like all like Kentucky, Ohio, all over the place. And she's like, I blame you, Lynn. But the point is, we actually, and we do this all the time, we actually hire her to teach improv. Like we hire our own people, because people are, you know, experiencing comedy and we hired her to teach improv. And she actually has a really good, she had developed a method specifically for teaching improv on Zoom, not just kind of making the best of it, but like specifically how we can do improv on Zoom and take advantage of the platform as opposed to just tolerating it.
How do you deal with laughter on there? Is everyone else?
It's not as good.
Like, is everybody mic'd or is everybody muted?
We always like our MC always, whoever's MCing always says, you know, makes a joke, like unless you're in a puppy daycare or a tap dance studio, please unmute. Or if you can't unmute, then at least let us see your faces. Let us see your smiles or like bring it in the chat. You know, like we just, keep saying, and then mostly people do, like they realize that it's not a meeting, you know, they don't have to be polite, or they've been there themselves. And so they try extra hard to like laugh extra loud. It's still not the same. I mean, it's just literally acoustically not the same as the vibe in person. But like, you know, what are you going to do? It's better than no show.
Yeah. I ended up teaching youth kids theater, right? We did a theater class online. I'm trying to remember if we ended up doing an improv class or not. But I did an original, like, play that we wrote. And that was the first, you know, that was heart of, that was all the stuff I always call heart of COVID is the, like the pre-vaccine where there was like nothing, could not, everyone's at home. And yeah, that was such a, it was kind of a cool, we did try to adapt it to make it a Zoom thing and make it like, let's not, it's kind of hard to pretend we're not on this. So I love the idea of actually playing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems, yeah. Again, also too, like that it's like another, just like another branch of the art form, another, you know, like the difference between acting on stage or in a movie, like it's going to be a little bit different, or the difference between watching a play versus a movie, or a movie at home versus a movie in the theater versus a movie when you're at a drive-in movie theater, it's going to be a little bit different. So
yeah. We had one person who always did this, like even before our It's Funny on Zoom show, who would make up stuff. Like they would you'd think they were doing a regular stand-up set, but then it was sort of like, it was sort of like the Muppet Show, not really, but like you'd think they were just doing their set, but like things would keep going wrong in the house, you know, like they would just be, they'd be like, you know, so anyway, you know, I was at this cafe the other, wait, hold on, what? You know, and then, and then you hear like a crash, you know, like it was exactly, it was so perfect for Zoom. And then they kind of, you know, the stand-up was whatever, I don't even remember what they said, but then it was actually a sketch. Because the stuff that kept going wrong just kept escalating. Uh-huh. And they turned it into a sketch of doing stand-up on Zoom, basically.
I love that.
Yeah, good stuff.
Now, did you start this during the pandemic, or are you from like...
Yes and no. The version that we have now, I did. I'd been noodling on different versions of it before. But I always, almost since the beginning and even before the pandemic, part of my vision was for it to exist for the, actually, at least for like the headquarters or the hub to be online, for the reasons that we've discussed, you know, from a business standpoint, for reach and scale, as we say, yeah. But also, I'm in New York. I'm not paying rent in New York and then competing with UCB and Second City in a building. Like, it's just not a smart move.
Yeah.
So I had a different vision, which was, which is kind of, which which seemed to me to be doable only online, which was to sort of come for the classes, stay for the community. In other words, have this space that's always there. This virtual space that's always there, where everyone's always there with profiles and, you know, ways to, you know, share your pilot scripts so people can read it and your pictures and your this and, you know, like all the stuff we can do online, but in a private, you know, behind a paywall. And it took me a while to kind of, but I'm not a tech founder. So it took me a while to kind of figure out like, well, how do I do that without actually building software? And the answer is someone else built the software, meaning not bespoke software for us, but the same kind of need was coming up for other kinds of businesses and communities before the pandemic as well. So we live on a platform called Mighty Networks that provides the, it's basically like, you know, they provide the raw space and we bring the party. And so that was the idea. That's how I was thinking about it even before the pandemic. And then during the pandemic, for various reasons, was the moment. So early pandemic was the moment where I was like, okay, right. I'm not building my own software. I'm moving. I'm putting all our stuff on this platform that we are still on called Mighty Networks, where we've really been able to grow without having to worry about the tech piece.
And you're in New York?
Oh, you're on mute, Silas.
We are muted, Silas. Yeah.
You're in New York?
Yes.
Right now? Is that where you, did you start comedy there?
I started comedy in Boston. So, and despite my youthful appearance, I am old enough to remember like mics or like Monday night shows, you know, where I'd go up early and, you know, be the novice. And then it would be like, you know, later in the night, it would be like, ladies and gentlemen, Dane Cook, or ladies and gentlemen, Patrice O'Neill, or ladies and gentlemen, Bill Burr. Yeah. And I'm not saying we were friends. We weren't not friends. I'm just not bragging that much. I'm just saying that was the era. I'm just trying to paint you a picture of the
gotcha.
So I did stand up for a while in Boston, and then I moved here because New York, although I'm from, you know, I love Boston. I'm from Boston, and that's my place. But I have dual citizenship. Let's put it that way. And then I came here and kept doing it for a while. And then kind of phased out. Like, I never really quit. I just kind of woke up one day and realized I hadn't done stand up in a while. And I think it's because for two reasons. One is that my goal for doing stand up was to do stand up. So I did it, you know, not to be like check it off, but like I wasn't very ambitious. You know, I wanted to do stand up. I did a lot of stand up, loved it. And I also was doing comedy comedy was infused in everything I was doing. I was still in the comedy world, even if I wasn't on, you know, New York Comedy Club at 11:30 PM on a Tuesday. So I just kind of phased out. I gently, lovingly phased out the stand-up part and kept all the other things going, and eventually, you know, funneled it all into what I'm doing now.
I did my high school time, junior high, in outside of Boston.
Really?
Where? So a little dinky town called Millis. Wow, you heard of it. That's incredible. They had one stoplight when I was there, but
yep.
Then, like, I had a friend, his name was Joey Healy from
Healy. No, I don't know Joey Healy. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, you know, disappear from that area for a couple decades and then find out that people you knew had started doing stand-up comedy, I think is a funny thing. And you're like, what? Oh, I had no idea we had that that interest in common ever as a kid. So, yeah. What you go ahead, Samantha.
No, I was like, oh, you had an interest in stand-up comedy ever since you were a kid?
I mean, just that listen to stand-up since you were a kid, right? Like, oh, I told actually my first ever on stage thing was a talent show, and I told a couple, now I know they're street jokes. I told some jokes.
Well, you know, the rough streets of Millis, that's where you learn your street joke.
When I was super, actually, that was like I was in third or fourth grade, the first time I got on stage and told a joke.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Early bloomer.
But what got you into comedy to begin with?
I just like it. Like, I wish I had a deep story. Like, I was just kind of, I don't come from like a circus family or anything, but I was like raised on comedy just it was just on, you know, my parents, like during the day there was, you know, opera was on, and at night, you know, the Muppets, Laugh-In, Carol Burnett, all those variety shows, like Captain and Tennille, Donnie Marie, which were funny also. They were like, you know, vaudeville, you know, between the bell bottom dance acts, it was jokes you know, and sketches. And it was all just good old fashioned. And the sitcoms back then were like freaking golden age. I mean, it was like All in the Family and Barney Miller and MASH and the Jeffersons and it was at Soap, you know, it was just, they were always on. And my, you know, my parents just like made sure I watched Monty Python as much as they made sure I did my homework, you know? And back then, back then there were plenty of women, you know, I didn't think about it in terms of, you know, when my favorites of all were, you know, Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball. And of course, Miss Piggy, but I think of them as like female comics, you know, it was just, they were just funny. And so it didn't occur to me that like, I can't do that. Only the men's do that. Like it didn't, you know, it just didn't occur to me either way. And it just kind of became the, like my love language, which that's a dumb expression, but you know, it just kind of became like, I'll edit that joke in post, but like, it just like became my jam. And in, my brand, if you will, you know, it, cause I was in middle school or even elementary school and middle school and high school, like I gravitated toward being the funny one in the musical, you know, and that kind of thing. And not, I didn't have like a plan. I didn't have a 5-year plan or, a particular dream. I just like did funny things at school by day and then went home and memorized George Carlin and Steve Martin by night. And this is what I did. So, I don't know. I moved back to Boston after college and then I was like, I'm going to take a class. It was just like, I have no dramatic story. I actually do have a dramatic story. Mm-hmm. It's not about me deciding to do comedy. I would just always kind of was drawn toward it like the magnet that pulls in the Millennium Falcon.
I mean, it's a
Silas, you're on mute still.
It's a tractor beam, but
that's what I meant. A magnet, yeah, tractor beam. I was learning two things at once. I know it's a tractor beam for sure, but I was mixing metaphors because I was thinking in my head of those in cartoons, in old cartoons, you know, those giant, like the Roadrunner or the Wile E. Coyote would use to bring the Roadrunner in, like the red ones, huge U-shaped magnets with the silver tips. So I was thinking of that at the same time that I was thinking of the tractor beam. Yes, Silas. Yeah. With the Millennium Falcon.
I just mentioned Looney Tunes to some kid the other day. And I was like, do you know what the Looney Tunes are? And they said, no. I'm like, oh, it's too bad, kid.
Too bad.
That's what we had. Like, that was it. Those are cartoons.
That's what we had.
And you would have got this joke really well if you knew what Looney Tunes were, kid.
And a lot of them were like sort of slapstick and kind of violent, I guess. But a lot of them were just like good old fashioned. And I keep coming back to this, but like good old fashioned vaudeville, you know, just like,
oh, yeah,
super like basic in the best way. Fundamental, like the fundamentals of comedy were in those cartoons, you know.
And you learned stuff like about everything I know about opera is from Bugs Bunny.
How else are we going to learn the Barber of Seville unless you grew up in my, but totally. Oh, was it the Marriage of Figaro? No, it was the Barber of Seville. Yep.
Even I have shown the kids Looney Tunes at the house. I found old clips and showed. And I am surprised how smart, like how they put such intelligent humor into these cartoons that I never caught as a kid.
No, that's how they get you. That's how they get your parents to watch. Or that's how they maybe get your parents to not mind if you watch. Or I know. And like the ones now, they're so much smarter. This is what makes me nuts. They're so much smarter than the ones that, and like, God help us, the ones that are supposed to be educational. Like, they're not. Like, I'm sorry. No shade to Dora herself, but no one is learning Spanish from watching Dora. No one. Like, maybe a word. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, a couple words.
Words.
No. I almost feel like it's a little bit unfair in the sense that there's so many different cartoons to compare nowadays.
Well, that's true. There's so many.
I mean, there's like such a big, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what's that, like, say they're educational? Like, I'm not convinced that they are. I think it's just as educational to kind of like watch something and like somewhere in your brain, which like we all did, we didn't know we were doing it, but we were learning how, like, we were kind of learning a three act structure and the beats of comedy, and we didn't know it. And honestly, that's important. Here we are.
Oh, absolutely. I do. I think that's what bugs me about when my kids like shows that are like, first, I don't know why they're addicted to them or why they want this show. Cause I'm like, but it's really bad. This isn't
so vapid.
It's not being done. Right.
The art is bad. And it's very like shallow and kind of corporate-y and focus grouped and like, yeah. Mm. Wah. Kids these days.
I still, Sesame Street has still maintained an ability to be so fun and educational. And I would show them more episodes if I didn't know now how bad some of the things were. I don't have to explain to my kid about smoking right now about why is the Muppet smoking? Like, because they still have a trouble with they like working out bad guys and good guys.
Yeah.
They like professional wrestling and the clear delineation of who is a bad guy, who is a good guy. And they'll like turn to me when something happens, like, are they a bad guy now? Or wait, are they a good guy?
That's funny. I remember we showed our kids were little. We showed them West Side Story because we just showed them anything. Our rule was you can watch anything as long as you let us talk about it, you know? So we watched West Side Story, and afterwards we were like, well, you know, they had questions, you know, and we were like, yeah, it's about bullying. And immigration, you know. So yeah. But they learned a lot. They love it. So
And also, if you don't dance in groups, your chances of getting hurt on purpose or accidentally are just like way low.
That's really true. It is a safety, a matter of safety.
And you might want to see whose sneakers were tied, which shoelaces were.
Yes. It's true. do you guys watch What We Do in the Shadows?
I don't think
I've seen some of it. I haven't.
Silas, you're muted.
I keep muting myself so that I don't cough in your guys' face.
Don't worry.
I've seen some of it, but I haven't watched it regularly yet.
Well, recommend, but also I won't give anything away, but let's just say there's a dance off that is absolute comedy gold with Vampire.
I would expect a dance off.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, okay, now I have to watch that episode.
Yeah, it's in the last season, so
you got to catch.
Gold?
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yep. That's all I'm going to say about that. No spoilers.
Where does gold comedy come from, by the way?
It's, you know, comedy gold, but like flipped around because we prioritize the others. Hold on a second. Hold on. T.O.'s.
T.O.'s?
Sorry, T.O.'s. Someone is trying to, I don't know who is, what time is it? What's today? Speaking of gold, I'm on the gold account and we have so many classes going on. I'm on the gold Zoom account and we have so many classes going on that I'm trying to figure out who is trying to sign in right now. But there doesn't need to be anybody, so it should be fine. Anyway, I wanted to flip around the idea of gold comedy comedy gold. And because we put the others first, because, you know, what we're trying to fix, you know, what we're trying to do for individuals is help them succeed in comedy and help them find collaborators and mentors and success, whatever that means to them. What we're trying to do in the big picture is change who they, you know, get rid of the gatekeepers, change people's assumptions about who does comedy, what comedy is, who controls it, who defines it. And because to this day, I mean, people still say, I will die happy if all I achieve, and it's a big one actually, is that the word comedian no longer exists. Or maybe an easy one where no one says female comic, because it's where people just call us comics, call everyone a comic, you know, also not like Asian comic. Like, I'm not saying that it's not necessary in some cases because you actually are talking about a specific thing, but so many times people say to me like, oh, so you're a comedian. Oh, sorry, comedian. And I was like, it was fine the first time, because what it implies is that like, men are regular comics and we're the ladies' auxiliary, you know, and we're like different. So I wanted to kind of just flip the default idea of comedy on its head and just turn comedy gold into gold comedy.
That's reasonable.
Thanks.
Are you the sole owner, manager, or do you work with
somebody? I have a co-founder. We have a team. You know, we have a person who runs our social and runs our editorial on our website. We have my co-founder focuses on like growth and marketing. We have a ton of advisors. Let's see, we have a community manager. We have, as I said, the editorial and social person who writes the newsletter. We have tons of instructors and advisors. Rachel Dratch is an advisor. And we have just kind of a wide network of mentors, teachers, and partners that we either drop by every now and then, or who we really partner with to support, for example, getting distribution for our content. So, for example, we've worked with a company called Cold Open, KOLDOPEN. And what they do is curate content, mainly web series, so that for example, producers who are looking for content don't have to like surf all of YouTube they make discoverability easier for people who are looking for content to produce or distribute. And they also package shows for fast channels, which are becoming bigger and bigger these days. And now we have a web series that some of our members created with our support that just dropped on Fox Soul, actually, which is one of Fox's fast channels. That series is called Late Bloomers. It's great. And we're working. How did I get on that topic? Oh, so we work with partners like that and partners, friends, what we call the gold fam, to just find the things that we need, the partnerships we need, the relationships we need to help people succeed and get that stuff out.
Okay. So we've hit the time of the show that the first time someone appears on, we ask them the world famous seven questions. You're nodding like you've heard of them.
I have heard of them.
My gosh. Okay. I told you, Samantha, it's at least coastal. It's at least coastally famous. Okay. Here you go. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Well, I'll say this to you because we talked a little, like, for a second about Massachusetts, but a thing I am very nerdy about is the American Revolutionary War history based in Lexington, which is where I grew up. And as did Rachel Dratch. And my joke about that is it was, you know, Lexington was a tough place to grow up in 1775. but I just went back there for the 250th, and I'm old enough to remember the bicentennial. And I was a tour guide when I was like 13. And so I have tormented my children, who are now teenagers, for years. They're like, we know Paul Revere didn't make it all the way to Concord. It was just William Dawes and Samuel Prescott. Oh my God, Mom. You know, so all that stuff, big nerd.
It's fun. I used to talk about the advantage to growing up in Massachusetts there, that U.S. history was the state history as well. So like when I went to, like, I felt like I already knew a lot of stuff in my history classes. Cause I was like, no, I've been there. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. No, we covered this all the time.
Right around the world.
Again, another revolution. Story. All right. That's a great, that is a very specific point of history. I love that. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Truffle potato chips, a truffle popcorn also, like, you know, popcorn or potato chips with a little truffle oil. They give it to you now at like those fancy movie theaters, where they feed you, you can have your popcorn like with truffle oil. And I'm like, hell yeah.
Do you have any like favorite store-bought brands? I'm just thinking when I've seen it at Trader Joe's, but I don't, that's usually where I go. So.
There's a Spanish brand from Spain called something that's not popcorn, but potato chips that I'm obsessed with, that I can't remember the name of. Let's see.
How are people going to send them to you if they?
Torres. The last name is Torres. So T-O-R, I mean, the name of it is T-O-R, you know, T-O-R. T-O-R, yeah. So they're really good. And yeah, they can just, people can find me on Instagram at Gold Comedy and find out where to send me an entire cake. Nice.
Here's what I'm confused with. I think a truffle is a different thing than I used to think it was.
Yeah. So
I used to think truffles were like a mushroom.
They are.
But they're not, it's not mushroom oil, right? It's not truffle oil, is it?
Yep, it's like infused. Oh, I see what you're saying. It's oil that's infused with this, with either black truffle or white truffle.
But it is a mushroom, like it's, that's what a truffle is.
Like a super expensive, harder to find. Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
I think it's,
Now I want to know the history of truffles, like how we got the name. Why is it truffle? Is it because mushroom oil didn't test well?
It's a certain kind that it's a certain kind that's
because you put it on chocolate too, right?
Truffles are different. I don't really know where the name chocolate. They're so delicious that. But I think I'm looking it up now because I think it's
so. There's two different kinds of truffles. Okay.
Or it means
the chocolate truffle is not the same thing as the mushroom truffle. Mm-hmm.
And so what's the truffle oil from?
The mushroom.
Okay. That's I find that very confusing. I don't know as a nerdy person who thinks they're smart. This truffle thing has confused me for decades.
Yeah, because I mean, the truffle mushrooms, they look different, right? They look kind of like prickly potato thingies. Yeah. So that's what the truffle mushrooms. Oh,
but they look chocolatey.
Right.
Oh, that's right. Why they call
there's chocolate truffles.
There's they're like, not, there's also white truffles, but
they're not chocolate mushrooms.
No.
But hey, scientists, think about it.
Think about it.
Chocolate mushrooms.
They have like these trained special pigs and special dogs just to smell for them, and they find them and they eat them, and it's like a whole old fashioned.
More than like the dogs are. I think the pigs are more old, like traditional, but they like to train dogs more because the pig will bite it and bite your finger off, and the dog is more obedient, so you actually get your truffles better.
Yeah. If I was a truffle pig, I'd be like, hell no, I'm keeping it.
What?
Yeah, right. I don't know why chocolate is called a truffle, but
wait a second. You're saying pigs will just bite your finger because they don't listen to you?
They're truffle hungry. They're obsessed with their truffle.
Yeah. And they'll, because they, okay, they don't listen to you, huh? Your pet.
They listen to their stomachs.
Pet pigs. Yeah. Another reason to eat them. All right. Number three. What's something that you love to drink?
I love a gin gimlet. I do love a gin gimlet. It's a gin and roses lime juice. That's it. It's my summer drink.
I'm sorry to interrupt your
roses.
This is terrible. I'm sorry to interrupt your famous questions by answering your stomach question here, Silas. But the chocolate truffles are named that way because of their resemblance to the mushrooms, because they look similar to the mushroom truffles. That's why they're named that. Okay. Okay. Anyway, but a gimlet,
for the drink.
A gimlet. Yeah. I mean, I like it with fresh lime too, for sure. And it has to be shaken, like well shaken.
What makes it a gimlet? Is it?
Well, it could be a vodka gimlet or a gin gimlet, but I think it's the lime.
And okay. Mm-hmm.
The sweetened lime.
Just with the lime.
Mm-hmm. I love anything with lime.
The gin is tough. Gin is tough for me.
That's fair.
Is an acquired taste? Is it a how did you find the gin? Was it a magic when the first time you tasted gin?
I think so. I was like, me and you, this is it. Yeah.
Like, why are you so tasty?
I know. I love them. Love them.
I think that was rum for me. I discovered, but it was like this coconut rum. So it was an easy one to like, and I go like, what is this?
Tan lotion. Yeah. I like the taste of it, but I broke up with rum after a bad night in Mexico when I was 14. Nobody told me, there's no drinking age. Nobody told me. I like the taste, but
like they didn't tell you rum was in something, or they didn't tell you like pace yourself. Like
they didn't tell me to pace myself. It didn't go well. So yeah, but I like the taste, like a rum raisin ice cream is.
Oh yeah. I love rum raisin ice cream. I haven't had it in a long time.
Sure.
I know you're supposed to. I know when you make like rum cake, like it's supposed to cook out. But I swear I had a rum cake at this like church bazaar once. And 30 minutes later, I was like, oh, no, this. Well, I feel like I just got intoxicated.
One, yeah, there's one. No, I'm not sure, but I think there's one that where it's like baked in. But then I think there's another where you soak it in rum. So the rum is not like the alcohol is not cooked out. So it might have been
maybe it was that one because I was under the wrong impression at that time.
Yep. Or maybe it was one of those cakes that, never mind, this joke won't work. You know, those cakes that you see where, you know, where you're like, is it a tuna casserole or is it a cake? And then they go, oh, it's cake. And I was like, maybe you thought it was a cake, but it was really just like a bottle.
It was just rum.
Yeah, that's funny.
Party. Yeah, I don't know. I like that.
Yeah. All right. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
Oh man, I love all kinds of music. I'm that person. I love, I'm probably most obsessed with, I'll give you my favorite like artists because they're all over the place. Prince, Katie Lang, Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash. Storm Large, who is, I know you're in Seattle, but she's from Portland. Love her. Giant voice. She's just really, she's fantastic. Look her up. You'll see. I love Brandi Carlile. I love everything from like Prince and the Time and like, you know, Parliament and I love Latin music too. So I love like Boogaloo and salsa.
Is there any music that you really hate or don't like?
Honestly, not really. I get a little annoyed by like, here we go, kids these days. By kind of pop that I can tell that sounds like it was made in a lab, you know, Like, I don't hate it. I just
like the robotic sounding voice kind of like,
yeah, I don't, I'll live. It just doesn't, I will literally never remember it ever, you know? Yeah. Just like,
Every era has their own version of that bubble gum that's not memorable.
I think. But it was better in the '80s.
What do you look like? You're thinking, Samantha.
I was thinking. Yeah, I definitely was. Yeah.
I mean, okay. All right.
Well, it's not really it's not super important, but I was just thinking, yeah, like the difference between it, at least if you know it's a real person singing, or if like this voice you're supposed to be enamored with that isn't even a human voice. But then I was thinking, then you get into the, okay, well, that's like branching off into another part of the art form of, you know, but it's not an actual singing voice.
I hate that. Like, it's when the music, that's okay. I mean, you're right. It's like a different art form. It's just, you know.
I wasn't saying that I love it. I was just like musing on that thought. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we can, but I mean, I guess to your point, we can kind of subject it to different standards, you know, like, is it a fun summer bop? Yeah, absolutely. Is it the same as what we would call music? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I remember people not liking synthesizers.
Right. At all. Right.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's horrible. Fake piano.
Right. Death of music. Yeah.
It's not real.
Yeah. And yet so many people are just united of their hatred of the bagpipe. I don't get it. Silas was teasing me our last session. That's hilarious. Our last time. Cause I was like, yeah, I like bagpipes, but, I don't know how often I sit around like just chilling, listening to straight up bagpipe music. I think I should find some. I listen to this one again and again, but it's not only bagpipes. Like there's other stuff in with it. But now I'm like, okay, let me.
Well, there's Korean pop, K-pop. There must be some S-pop, right? Some Scottish pop. That's just.
I think there probably is actually. My dad was a musician and he. Hey, I don't mind them, but my dad hated bagpipes and he famously said they sound like a cat fight.
Well, that just made it more fun for me now.
Like cats fighting.
I mean, yeah. I don't actually want cats to get hurt, but that's pretty funny.
That seemed apt.
Okay. Number five. What do you love to create?
Oh, well, comedy, duh. But I especially love, even though the way I do it now is I kind of like have a solitary place. I mean, I have a team as we talked about, but I really love when like a bunch of us are in a room or in a Zoom room making a thing. Like, even if it's something silly, like when we were figuring out, like, what are we doing for April Fools, you know? And it was just a bunch of us being dumb on Zoom until we figured out the joke. And then we just figured out if that's the joke, then what are all the other jokes? And like that kind of writer's room vibe, where you come out with something is to me just heaven. And also, food. I mean, I also like to create food, but it also like that is nurturing like food. The comedy part is nurturing like food.
I love it.
What kind of food? Wait, are you saying you like to create food, love to create food as well?
Oh, I love everything she was saying. I'm like,
yeah, I know. Then I was like,
right on board. What? And also I was curious about what food.
When you say food, do you mean like baking or cooking?
I like to bake okay, but my thing is I can do that thing where you look in the fridge and you're like, oh, we've got some wilting chives, a hunk of suspicious blue cheese, some truffles. my kids left over ziti, and then I'm like, and people are like, how did you do that? And like, I can do that, of just making things out of little bits of things. And it's delicious. But it's not magical. I practice because I really like it. So I've been kind of teaching myself how to do that for a long time, but it's really fun.
It's playing Top Chef or Chopped at home. Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I love doing that. Very satisfying. Right.
Number six, what's a game you love to play?
Can it be like hockey or does it have to be like a video?
No, any kind of hockey. Hockey.
Yeah. I used to play hockey. I still would if I had the chance because there's lots of padding. I'm old and I'm afraid of getting injured, but hockey at least has a lot of, like, I still have my, you know, so I feel less vulnerable. And the but in the other like parlor game, hockey is not a parlor game. The parlor game that I love is celebrities. People call it different things, but the one where you like write down the names on a piece of paper and throw them into the hat. And I don't know about you guys, but we used to play, well, two things. We used to play a hardcore 3-round version. Do you guys know the 3-round version?
No.
So, okay. So, you know, the basic version, right? Where everyone writes down. Okay. So
I'm thinking it could be a couple different ways. So yeah.
A few different versions, but the basic idea is that everyone writes down the name of, depending on how many people, everyone writes down the name of, you know, let's say 5 or 8 celebrity, different, like, alive or dead, just like famous people that people will basically know. They can be a little bit obscure, but they can be obscure. I mean, but the problem is you don't want to make them too obscure because you could screw your own team. Right. Yeah. So it's a fine line. Right. And so then you throw them in the hat and then you have, two or three teams, whatever. And the first round is you can say when you're trying to explain that celebrity to your team, you can say whatever you want other than the celebrity's name. Like you can be like, okay, the green guy on the Muppet Show who Miss Piggy was in love with, the most obvious thing, right? You couldn't say the frog. Because his name is, his name is the frog. And then the second round, then everyone kind of knows, the 40 or so celebrities that are in the hat, right? So then you put them all back in, shuffle them around. And then round two, when you draw them, you can say only one word
uh-huh.
for that person. But the funny part is that like, it can refer back to the game, right? Like you could then open up the thing and then say Piggy and people will say, oh, Kermit the Frog. Because you know what I mean? Because if you can refer back to clues, you have to listen because you can refer back to clues in the game. And then the third round is it's all the same celebrities back in the bowl, but you can do no words. So if it's Kermit the Frog, you could like, and so everyone knows Kermit the Frog's in there.
Right? Yeah.
So you could go like, ah! And then people would be like Kermit the Frog. But you have to pay attention. So it gets so funny because it gets so self-referential and people do clues that have nothing to do with the celebrity of a thing that happened in the game. And then the other funny thing is a long time ago in the 90s, when I was cool, we were playing it. We played it all the time in the 90s when I first lived in New York. And one time when we were playing it, Moby was there, like the literal actual musician Moby, who was extremely big in the 90s because he was a friend of a friend. And so of course, like some goofball put in Moby, And so like, awkwardly someone like drew him and they had to be like, real popular Czech musician for, or just like, point to him. Anyway, he was a good sport. So playing celebrities with a celebrity.
Thanks for explaining it because I've never heard of that version and I 1000% want to play. Silas, some point we've got to get a dinner party going.
As long as
all your like nerds, all your like characters, all your, game developer people that all that.
As long as we call it a parlor game.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Oh, and let's be in costumes like in Clue, except for nobody gets murdered.
Yeah.
The only murdering is like how good the game is played.
Right. Like
how delicious the truffles are.
All right. Last question. Number 7. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
The person who murdered the word comedian. No, seriously. That is kind of, yeah. Like if I can contribute, I'd like to be remembered for, contributing to having used comedy to help change the world. Whether it's by, helping support all the individuals who like in the aggregate put more comedy out into the world by different people. Different people, and also like start to control the gates and more and more they do now more than they did before, but control what kind of what kind of comedy gets made. They control our own ideas. We can change our ideas of who gets to be funny. You know, like we like to say, when you make people laugh, you make people listen, right?
Yeah.
And so what if I could be credited, at least in part, with, through comedy, building a world that listens to everyone's, that listens to everyone?
That'd be great.
I mean, come on.
Just got it.
Folks, mic drop. Okay.
All right. Okay, Lynn Harris of...
Also, I feel like since Silas is still muted, I'll take the opportunity to say, also, I think if you haven't already written a book, She Killed the Comedian, or Who Killed the Comedian? Oh, yeah. I Killed the Comedian would be such a fun title if you haven't already done that.
That's actually really good. I do have a book. I did write a comedy mystery novel many years ago called Death by Chiclet. So it's similar.
I like that.
It's
by Chiclet.
Yeah, that's cool.
So Lynn Harris from Gold Comedy, thank you so much for stopping by. That's all the time we have for today. But it was appreciated. Thank you for reaching out to us and telling us. And where tell us one more time where we can go to check out Gold Comedy.
Goldcomedy.com. And you can learn all about, you can find the resources that we have just on our website, free for everyone. And you can find out about joining our community, where we have a magical world of unlimited classes and speakers and collabs and more. And also Instagram. It was just Gold Comedy on Instagram.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.